You're now tuned in to the Front Row Hoopcast, your show for everything Butler basketball. The Front Row Hoopcast is back. Butler just moments ago actually beat Creighton at Hinkle Fieldhouse. I'm your host, Ari Castle. I'm joined this week by Mr. Brian Weitz. A lot of people listening just said, who? Because they probably don't know who you are. So I wanted to be sure to mention that, because you are someone, I will say this to introduce you. I follow a lot of Butler fans on Twitter. There's probably three or four whose opinions I legitimately respect and who I trust. You're probably one of them. You were Butler women's basketball manager for 3 years. You also developed, the reason you're on the show today is because you developed advanced basketball stats program, which college basketball teams use, players use to kind of gauge performance, kind of scout. Am I describing that correctly?
Yeah, so when Drew Cannon, I want to say first, great to be back. It's actually my second appearance on the Hoopcast. I made a cameo in New York delivering you.
Oh, I was in the suitcase. That's right. That was you.
Yes. If you go back and watch all the Hoopcasts and you watch the first Big East tournament from 2014, I have
my
Tennessee orange pants, and I am delivering Ari in front of the hotel out in the suitcase.
I forgot about the good call. Okay.
Yes, but I didn't have a job after I graduated in 2014. I was talking to one of my friends who had played, and we were talking about converting basketball possessions into points. And I thought about what Drew Cannon had done and thought, hey, I'll bet I can do that. So I took a shot at it and spent 6 months at it, 6 months of unemployment and a couple million Excel formulas later, and we had some significant on-off stats.
The reason why, like I was going to say, I like your opinions because they're stat-based. I see a lot of people on, a lot of Butler fans, myself included, who we think with our hearts, where we see something and we have bias and we say, I like that or I don't like that. The numbers don't lie. That's why I love discussing this with you. Let's start out with kind of just this Creighton game in general. I know there's obviously no stats on it, but Butler put a whooping on Creighton, 93-70. Paul Jorgensen off the bench, super effective yet again. Nate Fowler with a heroic performance, if I may add. You are a huge Nate Fowler fan, as I recall. I mean, I wasn't at the game, I was working. Give me the recap.
Oh, I love Nate Fowler. Nate Fowler played like he knew I was going to get on here and sing his praises. But I don't think somebody can love a basketball player who is more ridiculed by a fan base than Nate Fowler is, but that is my guy. My recap of the game is that we had three MVPs. We had Keelan Martin, who closed the game out for us, closing out a phenomenal career at Butler. I don't think people give Keelan enough credit for exactly how good he is. Then we had Paul Jorgensen, who came in and just lit it up from the start. He didn't start, so I guess it wasn't exactly a start, but he really got us off and going. And then Nate Fowler just carried us throughout the game. He was consistent. He was steady. I think he only had two misses. He cleaned up the boards.
He went 7 of 9, yeah.
Yeah, he was just spectacular all the way throughout. And then we had an X factor in there. The Hinkle rims tonight were friendlier than Buddy the Elf. So we had three threes, I think, that hit the rim and bounced in. I don't think I've ever seen that in a game. But, Henry Badley came in and hit a couple. He had two that bounced in, and then Keelan had a couple. Tonight went about as good as a game can go. When you play like Butler played tonight, there's not a lot of teams in college basketball that can beat you. But, shooting 75% on threes tends to do that for a team.
I would tend to agree with that. So let's talk about Butler's offense. Sometimes I watch it and I'm like, okay, we're looking really good. And sometimes I watch it and I think, this looks like the stuff that like Butler would just pick apart years from now. Like when we would play these top-ranked teams who would run like really isolation hero balls, and Butler would just pick their asses apart. That's what it kind of resembles sometimes. I never know what to think, and that's why I need to hear some bare-bones stats to tell me, is our offense good? Are we taking good shots? Because sometimes I feel like some of the junk Keelan throws up, it goes in, but it doesn't look very good. What do you have for me?
So my overall interpretation of Butler's offense is that we largely take good shots. We take more mid-range shots than we need to, say, for Sean McDermott. Sean McDermott's shot chart is just a thing of beauty. He has taken three shots outside of 4 feet that have not been a three-pointer this year. Like, that is the way basketball is going. That's exactly what you want to do. Sean McDermott takes the best shots by far. Nate Fowler, He's number two on that list.
So when you say, I just want to clarify to everyone, a good shot up is layups and threes, like mid-range twos. It's the highest risk for the lowest reward.
Yeah, the way that I got into thinking about stats was the fact that, you know, you might have a guy who's taking an open shot from 17 feet, but that's exactly what the defense wants to give him. And why is that? And that's because the idea of a basketball possession is to convert that possession into points, and you want to maximize that point value. And if you look through the metrics on basketball, you have, when I ran my stats program through 2014, I think that we were averaging like 0.9 points per layup, like 0.95 per three. And then there's a significant drop off. Mid-range shots are like 0.65. So largely throughout basketball, people have realized that that mid-range shot just is not a very valuable shot.
It's not worth it. Yeah.
Exactly. Like the difficulty of that shot does not
equate to the reward.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And additionally, with three pointers, you have the opportunity, you have more long rebounds, you get a higher chance of retaining that possession. Layups, dunks, those are great. So largely I would say that Butler takes very solid shots. One thing that's been interesting about Butler, and one of your guys is one of your guys, Paul Jorgensen.
we'll get into him.
Is that there's actually been a significant increase in unguarded jump shots through the season as we've gone
that
from
Butler's
non-conference.
Taking.
Exactly. And so we've been able to get much better shots, and we've seen that really correlate to a significant increase in offensive production as the season's gone on.
So what is it? I mean, do you not agree that sometimes the Butler offense just doesn't look very good? Like, is there a way to pinpoint that, or is that one of those things where if something just falls apart, we just are not executing?
Well, I attribute that to one of two things. One of them is that Butler offense excels at scoring off of cuts. I think we're in the top 5th percentile in the nation in scoring off of cuts.
Wow, all right.
But if that cut's not there, what else do you have? Another thing that Butler excels at is scoring in isolation. Kamar Baldwin is one of the very best in the country at scoring in isolation scenarios.
Huh.
And Keelan Martin is also very, very good. What that turns into is a situation where if you don't have a bucket, that possession looks very bad. So there is some standing around. But if you're going to isolate a guy on the weak side of a floor, what exactly do you want the other guys to be doing? Because if there's a significant amount, there's only so much motion you can have without bringing another defender over.
Yeah.
And so when the first option's not there, I think we tend to get into some trouble. And so I think Kamar takes a lot of blame for playing hero ball when that's actually the best option in the offense at that point in time in the clock, even if that's not what we wanted to go into that position looking to get.
Interesting. So even that's the best, statistically speaking, that is the best option for Kamar.
It's hard to say it's the best option because it's entirely predicated on what's happening in the game.
Yeah,
but Kamar takes too much blame for playing hero ball because Kamar isolating to go get a score is not at all a bad outcome, or is it not at all a bad proposition for our offense?
So continuing on the offensive trend, we talked about Keelan Martin. Before you actually came over here, you were texting me saying, is Keelan Martin, you know, first team Butler all time? Like, would he be one of the top five Butler players, and, you know, first team Butler? And I said, I don't know if he'd be first team, maybe second team, but like, what is he doing this year, even in his career, that you've been so impressed with? Because I've been a huge Keelan Martin fan. I think that he's a perfect 3-and-D guy for the NBA. I don't know if he'll translate there well enough, but just on the court for Butler, what are you seeing?
There's obviously the scoring, but I think that people kind of underrate just exactly what he's doing. When you're at the top of an opponent's scouting report every single game, and you are the guy that they are programmed to stop, and they cannot stop you, that says a ton about a player. How many guys in college basketball are there in any given year that can really put a team on his back and go get baskets and rally that team by himself?
A dozen. Maybe.
Maybe, right. Yeah. I was thinking 7 to 10. I was thinking that in the Big East, we've got maybe Jalen Brunson and Trayvon Blewett. I was thinking Trae Young this year. Even Trae Young's, like, you look at what Trae Young's done in recent games. His numbers have tanked, and that's because when there's a book on you, it is really, really difficult to adjust. And Keelan Martin has done that. The other thing about Keelan Martin that he has done is his rebounding for his size is
phenomenal.
It's unbelievable, and nobody ever talks about that. And that correlates to some of the best on-off stats that we see with Keelan Martin that we've seen in years. And so I think that Keelan Martin's got a chance to be the biggest loss this year since going back to Shelvin Mack. And when we went into 2011 losing Matt Howard, Shelvin Mack, he's not going to be the same thing as losing all of those guys, but we are going to miss Keelan Martin significantly more than I think people expect.
I've always wondered, because I've always thought he's a really underrated defender. I think our team, I mean, defending the three as a team, we're pretty terrible at, but I was always wondering, Keelan as a defensive end, if you had anything on that. You have a lot of stats over there.
Yeah, I'm sorting through things right here. This makes for great radio, but so Keelan Martin defensively, he grades out okay.
Comparatively, rank our team, right? Can you rank our team of where?
This is going to get everybody going. This is my favorite thing about being here.
All right.
Ranking our team by points per possession, we have Nate Fowler in the lead, allowing 0.674 points per possession.
But Brian, he's so soft.
This is one of my favorite things.
He's soft, though. That's what everyone says.
Calling Nate Fowler is the biggest admission of ball watching when you are watching a game instead of watching what is going on away from the ball that one can possibly make.
Explain.
I want people to watch 5 minutes of Nate Fowler playing defense. He does not take a second off. From the time that the ball crosses the half-court line, he is bodying up somebody. He is pushing people out of the lane. He is making the post catch the ball far away. He's switching onto guards. He cut off guards 5 or 6 times that I could count tonight guarding them on the perimeter. When you have a 6'10 center who's cutting off guards, it opens up so many different things you can do with your defense, because the way that you can handle ball screens completely opens up. You don't have to hard hedge. You can do whatever you want, and you can retain some sense of trust in that defense that anybody can get a stop. And when you have trust in the other your other teammates on the floor, that's when a defense can really gel together.
I knew you were going to say, because I know Nate is a stats darling, but look, I'm legitimately curious. Defensively, where else? Who are some other interesting, interesting guys up there that are who are really bad?
Well, Henry Badley is also exceptional. Watching Henry Badley play defense is really fun. Henry Badley really gets after it as well. There's multiple possessions where you'll watch him go down in the post. He'll be physical with somebody. He'll be pushing people around. He looks like he's fun. He has fun playing defense. And for me, that's really exciting to watch, because I'm a guy who likes going back and looking at the tape, and I don't need you to have the ball or be guarding the ball to see what you're doing. You kind of the same similarities that you have with Fowler and Badley. You have guys that are really in great positions at all times, and then Henry Badley is just phenomenally physically gifted. He had one block today where he got beat and he slapped it off the backboard, and it was loud. but then going through the list, you have Kamar Baldwin, who grades out as average, actually slightly below average.
A lot of Butler fans will be shocked to hear that.
Now, I think this is one where you can't look at the stats. Okay. I think you have to look at what is Kamar doing on defense. I think Kamar has a tendency to gamble a little bit, but Kamar's guarding the best guy at all times. Kamar's asked to do the most on defense at all times. If there's anybody that's ever going to dig down, it's going to be Kamar Baldwin. He's responsible for getting back. This is going to lead to somebody getting beat. Also, if you look at Kamar Baldwin at the end of a game, Kamar Baldwin's our best guy. When as a primary defender late in the game, Kamar Baldwin's the guy.
Brian, we all knew it was coming to this. I talked a lot of crap about Paul Jorgensen in my time on the Hoopcast. I've said I don't think he's very efficient. I don't think he's very good. I've been called out for it. I need to know, Brian, what the stats say. Have I been wrong or have I been right? I need to know.
Paul Jorgensen's season's really a tale of two stories. He was all world going through Villanova. And my basketball people who are saying, I don't know how he's going to be, they're texting me and saying, I was wrong about Jorgensen.
I never said that.
Well, really, like I had that confused. I was getting mixed messages from you. Paul's been trending downwards a little bit. I think we've seen a little bit of a breakout since he started coming off the bench. I think it's interesting statistically what's happening with Paul Jorgensen. Before the Nova game, he was at 1.18 points per possession. After the Nova game, he's at 0.82. There's one explanation for that. He's just missing his threes. He's not taking worse shots. He's actually shooting more unguarded shots. He's just missing them. And I'm the type of guy who I'm a baseball guy. Like, first and foremost, I grew up playing baseball. I grew up coaching baseball. You put yourself in a position to succeed, and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. So I can't get down on Paul Jorgensen for taking good shots and just missing them when we have evidence that he can make them. Additionally, I think that you have to look at the rest of Paul Jorgensen's game. Since the Nova game, there's been a significant upgrade in his stats as a pick and roll ball handler. We've seen a great leap in the team's ability to score as when he's the ball handler, going into pick and roll situations. Additionally, his defense has taken off. As the team's defense has gotten worse since conference started, Paul's has stayed the same, which you have to look at everything in a relative basis. And there's an explanation for that. Paul's guarding shooters a lot better. He's really running guys off of the three-point line, and he's actually guarding drivers better too. He's fouling a little bit more, but overall, you really have to like the development of Paul Jorgensen's game throughout the season.
You know, I was expecting you to honestly come in here and be like, Ari, you were right about Jorgensen with the advanced stats. So this is kind of a kick in the nuts.
Well, I didn't say you were wrong, but I didn't say you were right either.
It didn't sound like I was very right.
Well, when a guy's missing shots, there's only so much you can say about that. I mean, when you're a shooter, you shoot.
How's he compared to McDermott?
I don't like that comparison. I think that if you're going to compare him to McDermott, you have to bring in Henry Baddeley and Aaron Thompson to that situation, because if you look at the way that Butler uses Sean McDermott and Paul Jorgensen, it's almost nothing alike.
Really?
The way that they've trending is completely different. Actually, one of my favorite fun facts about this Butler team is I think that Paul Jorgensen's like the sixth most efficient player in the nation against a zone, and Sean McDermott's like the 12th most efficient against a man.
Really?
Yeah, it's something
That's
crazy
so
like
random.
That. They're both in like the 99th percentile against different defenses, and nowhere close in the contrary. But Sean McDermott, he doesn't shoot off screens. He just does not. I think he has three attempts shooting off screens this year. He's missed all three of them. But Sean McDermott in spot-up situations is the closest thing we have to automatic that a team can get. If Sean McDermott gets the ball uncovered, I want him shooting the ball if he's at the other team's three-point line. He just does not miss. Sean McDermott also doesn't handle the ball.
Never.
Paul Jorgensen can handle the ball.
Yeah, he doesn't turn it over.
He's been much more reliable than I anticipated, especially early on the season, as the ball handler. I don't know that I want him as my point guard or my primary point guard, but am I willing to run 3 or 4 minutes with Paul Jorgensen as my point guard?
It's not going to hurt you.
Absolutely, I am. Then what Sean McDermott is defensively is the total opposite of what Paul Jorgensen is. Sean McDermott, since Nova, has actually really struggled guarding shooters. Paul Jorgensen's been pretty good. I think that since the Nova game, I think drivers are like 2 for 11 against Sean McDermott driving. Like, it's exactly the opposite of what I would expect when I watch Sean McDermott and analyzing his weaknesses. He's actually been really good at shutting down isolations against him. And so I think that comparing Jorgensen and McDermott isn't really a fair comparison, because you're comparing an apple and an orange. They're two guys that get their points off of threes, but that's about where the line ends. I think that if you want to compare guys, Henry Baddeley is a much more fair comparison to Sean McDermott, and probably the way that you're going to use Jorgensen is much more similar to the way you're going to use Thompson. And so I think that
wait, Aaron Thompson and Jor, like, one can't shoot.
Well, you're not gonna. I don't like the idea of interchanging Thompson or not Thompson interchanging McDermott and Jorgensen, just because they are such different players. Also, McDermott is a great rebounder.
Very. For his, I would agree. For his 150 pounds.
Yeah, I mean, McDermott and me are the same size. I'm 6'1".
We talked about Aaron Thompson. He is such an enigma on offense. On defense, I think he's been average, honestly, defensively. My big question for you was him versus Kamar running the point. I didn't know if there was anything to say. What's the best option for Butler in terms of a statistical standpoint from them? Like, who is our best option running the point?
Keelan Martin. just let Keelan do everything. I mean, you put Keelan in pick and roll situations, he makes the right call almost every time. He's not actually the best ball handler. That would be Thompson, in my opinion. But the numbers don't like Thompson. But Thompson has his moments, and I think that what people need to understand when they look at Thompson's numbers is that he's a freshman point guard starting in the Big East. Go back, anybody who wants to criticize Thompson on the basis of his numbers needs to look at this holistically. Go back and look at Chris Dunn's numbers early in his career, and they were brutal. Like, they make the, you know, like, they bring to mind, like, Rene Castro looking at his numbers early in his career.
He's actually having a very good senior year.
Castro's having a great year. I mean, does that not just prove the point that, like, rough, yes. that you can start off really rough and that does not forecast the prediction for the rest of your career for a point guard?
I assume his numbers statistically are so rough is because he's so limited offensively to the point where is that why his numbers are so bad?
I think that. Go watch the first half or the second early minutes of the second half of Xavier, and we were just getting pounded for the first 25 minutes of that game.
Eh.
Aaron Thompson comes in, shoots a three. He misses that three, and I think he missed it pretty badly. And we go on a run. Like, we come back and we've got a 6-point lead 10 minutes later. I think that the way that teams are able to play defense when Aaron Thompson has no poses no threat of shooting from the outside really allows them to collapse on one side, and that's when things get stagnant. As he's shot more threes, you've seen our offense open up. Yeah, and he doesn't even need to make them. He just needs to make defenders think about guarding him. Like, maybe I should go there. Maybe I should close out on him. And what I come back to is that the coaches know more than we all do.
Ah, well, yeah.
So, like, as fans, this is great to talk about, but if you're asking me for my honest opinion as to who's our best point guard, it should be Aaron Thompson, because if I can't come up with a better idea, or if I can come up with a better idea, so can they.
That's another big pet peeve of mine is when people tweet out, you know, coaching strategy during the game, and I'm thinking, you know, like, we should go to a zone here, or we should press here. I'm like, LaValle knows what he's doing. Well, you know, the coaches, you'd like to think they know what they're doing. I think that there's a lot of stuff that I don't know, that they clearly know, that Butler fans, you know, don't know. But I would agree, we just like talking about it.
One of the things that I think that you have to look at when you talk about coaching is that Butler is in the top 20 in the country in possession points scored per possession off of both timeouts and out of bounds plays.
Really? You would not have thought that.
I would not have thought that, but you have to correlate that in some way with coaching. I think that,
absolutely.
I think that Villanova and Creighton are ahead of us in one of those two categories in both of those scenarios in the Big East, but I mean, if you're following up Jay Wright and Greg McDermott is a fun guy. I need to know where he gets his haircut. But if you're following up Greg McDermott and Jay Wright, you're not doing so bad for yourself, especially as a first-year coach.
What about our scouts? You and I had texted about this. Sometimes I wonder if our scouting is not where it should be. I feel like last year's staff with Peden and Terry Johnson and Shraggy, we did a phenomenal job of scouting games where we, you know, we knew what was coming and we knew what to prepare for. I haven't been in the locker room. I don't know. It just feels like to me it's not been as strong. I didn't know if you had any thoughts about that.
Yeah, we'd really struggle defensively with the scenarios I just suggested, coming off of timeouts and out of bounds. So I went back because I actually wanted to look at this. So I went back through over history, and what I found was that this is actually something that we've historically struggled with.
Which aspect?
Guarding out of bounds plays and out of timeout plays.
We're good at running them on offense, but defensively we've for years struggled.
That's correct. Yeah, even under Holtman, and the success was not at the level that I had expected it to be. So I don't know what kind of conclusions you can draw from that, because at first my reaction was the same as yours, is that our scouts are bad, we're in a lot of trouble at the start of games, but we do great once the game once we get a flow into the game and can make adjustments. So I'm thinking, all right, our assistants are struggling, but Laval is great. So I actually did a lot of work about that with that today. And it segues into a little bit of the work. And I want to ask you, where are the greatest points of inflection in either us losing the game or us winning the game? I went through the season in 5-minute segments. So from 20 minutes to 15, 15 to 10, where do you think we are? Because I want to
where are the points?
Where are our most important groups of 5 minutes?
For us, I would think it'd be within the first 10 minutes of the game.
This was really interesting to me, because my bias was that our scouts are trash. We need to relook at our staff. The most important 5 minutes for us are the first 5 minutes of the second half. That's probably pretty predictable.
Okay.
The second most important 5 minutes is the 10-minute mark of the first half to the 5-minute mark of the first half. It is in those 10 minutes that the greatest, statistically, we either expand the lead significantly or fall into the greatest deficit.
It's been consistent.
And it's kind of the counter to the Xavier game. But yeah, if you look at what happened in the Maryland game, it was basically that exact same scenario. And so I think that trying to draw conclusions based upon our preparation, on one or two metrics is probably a little bit of a reach. You kind of hit on it though, that I think that I would like to see more preparation, but we've made significant strides in that direction as the season's gone on.
Brian, one of my favorite things, you'll text me things all the time, like random stats. Like I think yesterday you texted me Nate Fowler, something about Nate Fowler being dunked on.
He was today. Yes, that Nate Fowler had not been dunked on. His man had not dunked while he was the primary defender this season. At least, so like in a post-up situation, Nate Fowler's man had not dunked, and it happened today.
I wanted to know if you had brought any of those random nuggets that I love.
I was looking through last week, and I found this. It was like something like a third of Nate Fowler's misses have been blocked. And so
wait, a third of all of his misses.
Yeah. And so
that to be clear, that is astoundingly high.
It is astoundingly high.
What would the normal be?
Well,
5%.
Nate Fowler's block percent is really high, and he's like 5%. Yeah. Of like opponent's shots that are blocked. But like if you also flip that around, that means when Nate Fowler gets the shot off, he's shooting like 80%. And so I'm of the opinion, I'm such a numbers-driven guy that I don't care what it looks like, how you get your points. So if Nate Fowler is going to score on 6.5 out of 10 possessions for me, I don't care what happens on those other 3.5. They can be as ugly as they want because I know I'm getting my points, and that's what you get with Nate Fowler. It's not pretty, but I mean, that's coming from me. My favorite player all time is Alex Barlow, and the only thing Alex Barlow ever did that was pretty was his his senior night speech was the only thing that ever approached pretty that he did on a basketball court, but I loved watching that kid play.
He's actually my favorite player, too. All right, Brian, we're wrapping up here. This has actually been, I rarely learn a lot of information in one sitting with Butler people, and this has been a revelation. Anything else you got for me before we wrap this puppy up?
Yes, Butler is actually pretty good against the press. Offense.
No shit.
Yeah, I mean, but historically, we've got this. Like, I think a lot of Butler fans have a lot of misconception because of that one time against
Purdue in the Crossroads Classic. I think Villanova or something. I don't know.
One more game, VCU.
Oh, my God, when we got whooped by 30.
Yeah, when ESPN paraded it, did a whole parade in there with Havoc, and they had a Saturday afternoon, it was the biggest game in the history of their program, and we just crushed. And we could not do anything that game. But historically, Butler against the press, pretty good. So I think that a lot of Butler fans are really good, but I think that there's a lot more that goes on than to what I would say a vocal majority of complaints with our players are. And I think that everybody's in a lot better position than some people may like to believe, especially the future of the Butler program.
I would like to think so, too. Bright, the last thing I have to talk about is the refs, because you made a wonderful comment to me about why we shouldn't blame refs for games, and I hate it. I hate it blaming refs. I feel like that is such a cop-out because of the 150-plus possessions in a game. Maybe you miss six calls or whatever. Maybe. That's not going to affect your game. You say it so beautifully, so I'm going to hand it over to you.
Yeah, so before I say this, I want to say that jump ball call tonight where the Creighton player traveled twice, threw it up in the air to himself and caught it, and it was called a jump ball, that was a laugh-out-loud funny call. Now, I would be furious if it was a close game and that happened. But it was not a close game. And even if it were a close game, that would not have impacted the outcome of the game in any way that's even comparable to the way that the players would impact the outcome of the game. In any given game, there's 125 to 175 possessions. There's at most 40 calls, so you're looking at 25 to 30% of those plays that the refs are involved with. Barring the most extreme circumstances, what happens on those plays is not going to have anything close to the impact that what happens on the other 70 to 75% of the plays.
Exactly.
So, yes, maybe we get a bad foul on somebody, but there's also T-1 plays for the rest of the game where there's not a bad foul on that person. And for the refs to impact a game, we have to assume that there are all the bad calls for one team and none against the other team. And if refs are bad, they're bad for both teams, because there is not a referee in the NCAA that walks into Hinkle Fieldhouse and is like, damn it, I'm going to screw Butler today.
So I feel like some people think is like, the refs are out to guess. I'm like, that is ridiculous.
Right. And now, like, there are certainly some games where the other team benefits more than Butler does from the refs. And there are games where we do, too. But logic dictates that if you would have to reach for literally the most extreme circumstances. Like somebody said, like four quick fouls on Keelan Martin. Like, yeah, that would impact the game. But like you have to grasp for like the most outlandish circumstances possible to come up with a scenario where the refs would maybe impact the game. If Keelan Martin got four fouls against Kennesaw State really quickly, we still would have beaten Kennesaw State. So
probably. All right, Brian, I was talking to my girlfriend the other day. And she says, who do you hate more, IU or Xavier? And I said, Xavier. And she goes, then why do you always end your podcast by saying IU sucks, go dogs, instead of Xavier sucks, go dogs?
I have to call you out on this. Okay. I don't mean to interrupt you, but somebody on the ButlerHoops.com message boards, also shout out Jared Grubbs, you do a phenomenal job with that. They commented that the opening to your show sounds like a weird Wayne's World intro, and they stopped listening. And I want to say that is their loss for stopping listening.
Oh, thank you.
But I laughed out loud at that comment because I don't think it could have been nailed any more than calling it sounding like
the
Wayne's
Butler
World.
Hoops board is vicious to me. I have just been lambasted on there, and I mean, I love the Butler fans, but I will get on there every now and then. I'll see like 30 comments on the Hoopcast page. I'm like, oh boy,
yeah,
here we go.
But what I would say that largely the content and the merit of those criticisms is coming up Ari. Got it? Nope.
Yeah.
Short.
Yeah, that's okay. That was terrible. Kevin Schwartz used to be on the show, and he used to actually make very good jokes like that.
Oh, don't no, we're not talking about Kevin.
Are you guys in a fight?
Oh, we're always in a little bit of a fight.
All right, Brian, we have to end the show with and we're going to mix it up today. We're going to say Xavier sucks.
Hell
go
yeah,
dogs.
Give me Xavier in New York. That's all I want is Xavier in New York.
All right, Xavier sucks, go dogs.
Xavier sucks.